In October 2020, two brothers began recording a podcast about the horror movies they love. All things seemed successful till they vanished in March of 2021. Now they have returned, the same, yet somehow different. You're listening to Horror Brothers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another edition of Horror Bros. I'm your host, Jason Johnson, along with
JT Johnson, and I'm awake, I'm alert. I mentioned Christopher Landon is directing Scream 7.
I think I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm here, man. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing good. Learning that I might need a new mic here right before we opened up, but I'll try to get onto that next week.
Yep.
First, before I get into anything, do you have any horror news or?
Not really. I'm pretty much dependent on you for that these days, because I am so busy going all over the place that I'm not being able to catch up with everything.
And you're doing good on that, by the way. You're not overworking yourself, are you?
Oh, no. I'm good.
Well, I do have a little bit of horror news. The first one is kind of sad, though. On Monday, William Friedkin, the director of The Exorcist, passed away at the age of 87.
Yep, I
good
saw
long
them.
Life. Good yep. long life. Controversial director, for yep. sure. May have broken some laws to get those chase scenes in French Connection, but, you know, you do what you can for your art.
That's right.
You know, you break Ellen Burstyn's back. That's what you do,
right?
You get the shot. No, but yeah, he passed away at the age of 87. I mean, I just had to get a shout out to him. I mean, he directed one of the greatest horror films of all time, if yeah. not one of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah.
Other little bit of news on our front. I have a new blog up. It's the Horror Bros blog.
Yep.
The address of which is horrorbros.blogspot, because I'm not paying for this, .com.
Yeah.
Maybe we start making some money one day. I'll pay for the URL.
Yeah.
But that's just a place for movie reviews, both old and new. Mostly it's going to be reviews I write for the movies that we are going to discuss. For example, by the time you listen to this, a review for our two films will already be up on the site. Again, that's horrorbros.blogspot.com. Another review you'll see, which I want to review right here real quick, non-spoiler review, saw a new horror movie, and that's Talk to Me from A24.
Yeah, you were saying you were going to see that, and because it's been getting a lot of buzz. And how was it?
It was really good. Speaking of The Exorcist, I would kind of call it The Exorcist of the Digital Age.
Yeah.
It's basically about a group of kids. I'm not sure they're supposed to be high schoolers or teenagers,
right.
or college kids. But the movie is basically one of the kids has this embalmed hand that they got, that you grab hold of the hand and you say, "Talk to me." And whoever's holding the hand, a spirit, an undead spirit, will pop up in front of them. And then you say, "I let you in," and the spirit possesses you, and you have 90 seconds to feel whatever you feel, and then you have to blow out the candle and get the hand out of the other person's hand,
yeah.
so the spirit won't stay. If you stay more than 90 seconds, the spirit may want to stay a little bit longer. That dims the rules of the game.
Yeah.
Obviously, that happens with one of our characters. Some people may be asking, why do this? Well, if you notice, everyone else in the party grabs out their phone and records it. So there's that aspect of it. That's what the fuck we would do if we had this.
Yeah.
But it's also established that it's like the greatest high. When you're possessed, it's the greatest high you'll ever feel. No drug or drink matches it. So that's why they all want to keep doing it.
Right.
Then, of course, it leads to craziness. But that's your general trailer synopsis.
Right.
It's an A24 film, so it's kind of a slow build here and there, and then bam, it hits you in the face. Slow build, bam, hits you in the face. It follows that very well. I loved it. I definitely say go see it. A lot of people already have. It's made almost $40 million, which for a movie that costs $4 million to make, that's a home run.
Yeah.
And A24 has already announced a Talk to Me sequel, which literally right now is Talk the Number Two Me. Yeah. So they've already announced a sequel that they're working on. A24 is also going to release, they've also announced through their Twitter that at some point, they don't have a set release date, they're going to release a prop replica of the hand, which is something A24 does, which I really like. They released the hot dog fingers from Everything Everywhere All at Once. You could actually buy those. Came in like an Oscar Mayer package. But beyond that, the only other news I have, which is kind of sort of related to my film that I'm talking to about today, coming soon to 4K, a Universal Classic Monsters collection. Includes 8 films: Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Invisible Man, The Wolf Man, The Phantom of the Opera, and The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Awesome.
New 4K release, going to be released on October 3rd, $129.99. So, you know, you're going to pay for it, but it's 8 classic Universal horror movies.
Right.
And that pretty much wraps up the news I had for this week. It's all I saw.
Right.
I was going to go watch The Last Voyage of the Demeter this morning, but we didn't buy tickets ahead of time because none of the seats were sold. And by the time we got there, all the seats were sold. So
wow,
it kind of filled up. I'm hoping this. They're saying it's going to be kind of a disappointing opening for the movie. Because I think there was a little bit of buzz around it, so people thought it was going to do better than it expected. But that Barbenheimer train keeps a trucking. Looks like that's going to be. They're even asking if by the end of the run will Oppenheimer cross the $1 billion mark. It's already close to the $600 million.
Yeah.
Barbie's there in record time, which means it'll overtake Super Mario Brothers movie. Thank Christ. fuck that movie, man. It was so boring. Anyway. it was, man. It was like,
is this one of them ones we disagree on, man? I really liked the Mario movie.
It was just a bunch of when your favorite character is the little blue star, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
I will give the movie this much credit, though. I will watch a sequel to it.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a good story to be had there. This felt to me like just a remix of levels. And then just kind of smashed together, which, granted, I mean, what else was I expecting?
Right? Maybe super smashed together?
Oh!
Hey-o!
But, Jesus, you are an old uncle.
Yes, I am.
But, no, I would watch a sequel because, I'll be honest with you, the thing I ended up not minding was Chris Pratt as Mario. I thought that was going to work on my nerves.
Yeah, as much as people bitched about it, it didn't really bother me, you know?
Well, it played as a joke in the movie. They do their commercial at the beginning, and they're like, super Italian!
Yeah.
And then they go, I think that did good.
Yeah.
I think so. But no, I think there's a good movie to be had there. We know we're going to get a sequel, and I'll go watch the sequel, and maybe that one will hit me better. But we're not here to talk about fun family children movies. Jason, I got to ask, who's going first tonight? You, me,
you? Why don't you go ahead and go first, and then and we'll,
My film is 2020's The Invisible Man. Came out in February of 2020, a month before the world went to shit.
Mm-hmm.
Was a solid hit. It made like 140-something million. This is a Blumhouse film, so it's going to make money.
Right.
The writer and director is Lee Whannell, who wrote most, or actually I think he wrote all and came up with the story of this last one, the Insidious films. But he's also, as a director, he's a student of James Wan because they both kickstarted the Saw movies together. In fact, he's the guy with Carrie Ells in the original Saw in the bathroom. That's Lee Whannell.
Yeah.
He acted in the movie as well. The cast is Elizabeth Moss, Aldis Hodge, Storm Reid, Oliver Jackson Cohen, Harriet Dyer, Michael Dorman. Synopsis is pretty basic. Not long after getting out of an abusive relationship with a tech genius, Cecilia learns that her former boyfriend Adrian has committed suicide. However, she soon feels a presence as though someone is watching her. So maybe Adrian isn't dead after all and isn't done playing his abusive games with Cecilia. I guess my first question is, Jason, did you watch this movie?
I did watch this movie. I've seen it, and I thought it was great because they really updated the story of the Invisible Man. I loved the new take on it where they tell it from her perspective. They don't tell it from the perspective of the scientist who's discovering this and it slowly drives him mad like it is in most Invisible Man, you know. That's the original story. But they go from her perspective of the one being stalked by the crazy scientist.
Yeah. Which that very much came from Moss's involvement as well.
Yeah.
When she became involved, her and Wanell came to her and they both worked on tweaking the script to be more from Cecilia's perspective than maybe it originally was. And it's a great, the Invisible Man story fits that theme of when you're in an abusive relationship, even if the abusive person isn't there, they are still somewhat there in your mind and how they terrorized you. Because a truly abusive person isn't just physically abusive, they're mentally abusive.
Right.
Which is definitely what happens with Cecilia. And so that theme works extremely well in this movie. But it's never too preachy, which is what I like about it. It's never hits you over the head. It's just, that's the theme of the movie. Is how do you survive abuse?
Yeah.
How do you get out of it? How do you survive it? The movie, though, it definitely knows how to build up tension. I mean, that opening scene when she's trying to just get out of the house and it's very quiet and she's drugged him, and then she'll kick the dog bowl and it goes flying across the room, this loud echoing sound.
Oh, yeah.
Stay there, and she's got to look at her phone because she's got the security camera on him. And then the dog comes out and she can't take him with her, but she's going to take that electric collar off, and then she hits the car and turns off the alarm, and then she's really got to book it.
Yeah.
That opening sequence was amazing. And I went to go watch this movie in theaters when it came out. A friend of mine, Jamie, she's also a fan of horror, so we went to go watch this movie. And for me, it had quite the leap for me to get over. It had a high bar for me because of the classic Universal monster movies. My absolute favorite is The Invisible Man. 1933 is The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
That movie is, you watch that movie, it's from the same director of Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein. I'm blanking on his name right now, but you watch that movie and you still wonder how they did the effects in 1933. It's just fantastic. But you're right. The only thing outdated about that movie is it's the mad scientist from the 1930s.
Yeah.
That Claude Rains played so well. This movie does not work without Moss, though.
Yeah.
She, as Cecilia, has to carry the weight of this movie because her enemy is literally not there. So
yeah,
it's not like she has someone to play off of.
Yeah, she was amazing in this film. I loved every part about this. I love the take of, I'm blanking on the movie name. You'll be able to tell me. The Julia Roberts movie where she's running from her abusive husband. God damn it, I can't think of it.
I
thought of that movie.
I know.
I'm just blanking on it. But it reminded me so much of that movie as far as her character story goes, where she's trying to escape this crazy fucking guy who's basically kept her prisoner. And then you add in this element of, you know, he's dead. Oh, wait, no, he's not. He's been working on this invisibility tech, you know. And that was the other thing they did. They actually they upgraded the tech to where it is actually something that is feasible today. It's something they're actually doing today to create invisibility, you know.
It's based on reality. The cameras that project all around or something.
Yeah, it projects what behind you. It's got cameras all around, and then it projects onto the suit whatever it's seeing that is behind you. So that if something's looking at you, it's only sees what's there, you know, behind you.
This movie is probably the biggest reason I am glad that the Dark Universe failed.
Yeah.
For those who don't know what that is, Universal Studio Pictures wanted to make a shared universe like the MCU, and they wanted to use the Universal Classic Monster line. They cast everybody in all the roles. Johnny Depp was originally going to be the Invisible Man in this shared universe. Yeah. I remember that big put together picture of all of them together, like, hey, we're going to make a universe. And then I watched The Mummy in 2017, which no one else did apparently, and Universal went, oh, fuck no.
Yeah. Yeah, I never saw that.
From what I remember, it's just forgettable. It's not necessarily the worst thing ever made, but it just was forgettable. And so they nixed plans for that. And after they did that, they started to look at all the properties individually and say, okay, what can we do as standalone films? And this was the result of it. Jason Blum came in and said, I want to make an Invisible Man remake, and got Lee Whannell involved.
Yeah.
And they were off to the races. The movie's also got some genuinely stunning moments or shock moments. The biggest one being in the restaurant, which I think you know what I'm referring to.
Right.
With her sister. And that scene just was insane. And then it goes to the hospital. And what's great is, like, it's got a great she turns the tables kind of situation.
Right.
And there's even a couple of psych outs. There's one moment where you kind of think, oh, well, maybe Adrian is actually dead.
Yeah.
And it's someone else. It's just, it plays on psychological terror, trauma, and just has great jump scares. I loved this movie. And rewatching it again for the purposes of recording this episode, I rewatched it with Courtney and my roommate Courtney. And even he said, like, I forgot how good this fucking movie was.
Yeah.
I think this movie would have been even remembered even more had the pandemic not hit the very next month in 2020. And I hope that this movie gets its due. I hope it, you know, really gets in there and like people just remember it. I hope people remember it 10 years from now. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they will. But because that's the great thing about horror films is a lot of them tend to. But yeah, I love the movie, and I don't really have much more to say about it than that. Go watch it if you haven't, and if you have, watch it again. It's that good.
Yeah, 100%. I love Elizabeth Moss. She's one of my favorite people in the world. Do you watch Handmaid's Tale?
I've never watched it. I've been told to watch it.
Yeah, that's a great one. Oh, yeah,
it's
the list.
Long list of shows because I just don't watch that much television. But
yeah.
Right now I'm trying to finish up Schitt's Creek.
So. Yeah. She is she's fantastic in The Handmaid's Tale. I love it. I've seen every episode and it's great. Also read that book and read its sequel. They're very good. Anyway, I know reading books these days isn't the very big favorite thing to do.
I never knew that it was also had already been adapted into a movie before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, from what I've heard, say no more about it than that and leave it alone and chunk it into the dumpster.
Yeah,
but
just go watch the show.
but I saw this image when I looked up The Handmaid's Tale when someone told me to watch it. And I was like, that's not Elizabeth Moss.
She's amazing.
Star in a funny performance. Jason, what did you bring to the table today?
Well, I brought a classic, you know, a 1991 film, The People Under the Stairs. Yes, written and directed by Wes Craven, which, he's awesome. Of course, legendary horror writer and director. It stars Brandon Quinton Adams as Fool. and also AJ Langer as Alice, the little girl in the house. Those are our two protagonists. It has Everett McGill and Wendy Robbie as the two antagonists, the people in the house who are batshit crazy. Fun little thing about them is they played Big Ed Hurley and I forget what her name was, but it was his wife. They played husband and wife on Twin Peaks, which one day I am hoping that I can sit down, watch it all again, and we can do just a special episode on just Twin Peaks. That would be amazing.
I'm down because I still have yet. I need to rewatch the original show.
Yeah.
And I need to watch that season, that the third season that he did.
The reboot.
It's never been available to me, but I think I have access to it now.
Yeah. So. It's so good. It is so good. And you know me, I'm free. I'm a fan of the Lynchian world.
you're a Lynch freak.
Yeah. coupled with that though, on the cast, we have a couple of guys that, play into it. Jeremy Roberts as Spencer and a young Ving Rhames as Leroy.
And real quick, one more name on that list. Yeah. Sean Whalen.
I was just fixing to say Sean Whalen.
I thought you were.
I was just fixing to jump into some of the ones that are, of course, Kelly Jo Mentor as Fool's sister. And then Sean Whalen is Roach, and then there's a bunch of veteran cops, and of course people who are under the stairs. So Wes Craven is looking at a news report in 1978, and sees that there are two. This is the crazy part, because it's just based on something that actually happened. And of course it's very much longer around, but there were two burglars that broke into a house. There's two different accounts of it. Two accounts is the cops got there to catch the burglars, and they found a bunch of children locked in cages. The other account is that the burglars weren't there. They had ran because they realized they tripped an alarm, and when the cops got there, that's what. But they did. They found that these two parents had kept their children locked in cages, had never let them outside. They were severely abused, severely malnourished. And so he reads that story, and he decides to write The People Under the Stairs. Now, of course, greatly elaborates upon the story, because you would think that since this movie is based on this, that this would be a famous true crime story. All you know is that he saw this report. There's no accounting on the internet or anything of the actual story that happened. So the movie opens. We have a little boy named Fool, nicknamed Fool, who is his mom is sick. She has cancer. His sister is dating this guy, Leroy. They're sitting there talking about how they're being evicted because these crazy people that own this damn house. So, but the rumor is that Leroy tells Fool about is that they are there's the house where these people live. There's gold coins in there, tons and tons of gold coins. And so Leroy and his buddy Spencer are going to go rob the place, and they send Fool dressed as a bear scout, if you see what I'm saying, to go and case the joint. He's supposed to go and talk to the lady and try and get inside, and of course she won't let him in because they're fucking nuts. And so Spencer decides to just go on up and case the joint himself. He gets invited into the house. He's not coming out. They leave. The people who own the house leave. And so then Leroy and Fool break in, and craziness ensues because Everett McGill and Wendy Robey, known on the listing for the cast as man and woman, they call each other mother and father on there. You find out later in the movie they're brother and sister. They're nuts.
Let me put it this way. Ving Rhames is in this movie, which means Pulp Fiction is not the first film where he gets fucked by a gimp.
Yep. So, well, Jesus in Christ. This one, he doesn't really get fucked by a gimp. Rather, he's eaten by one.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. They're cannibals.
Yeah. And it sucked because it happened before he could call some hard pipe hitting brothers and go medieval on their ass. So, Everett McGill is the fucking character in this movie. Well, him and Wendy Robbie, they fucking make this movie. They are so good as playing these two crazy fucks, man.
They're so great. And yeah, and Craven has said that like the house itself and it is supposed to represent society in America at the time, late 80s, early 90s, and that these two were supposed to represent conservatives at the time. On the outside with the cops, they're good, upstanding, upper class citizens. But on the inside, they have all their deep, dark fucking secrets and corruption.
And that's what I love too, is this movie is a great little horror movie. It has some comedic elements to it. But also there's this underlying story, because these two people are basically trying to price the black neighborhood out of their homes so that they can move in and gentrify it. Now, this is 1991, before gentrification was even a big term that was used, but it was already happening in the world. And so this movie has this underlying story of, hey, don't be an asshole and fuck over poor people, you know? And so I love that part of it.
This movie is the prime example of when people ask me who's the classic directors that I can compare current directors to.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele is today's Wes Craven. He does a lot of what Wes Craven did back in the day. Wes Craven didn't just want to make horror. He was an English professor, for fuck's sakes. He wanted to make a statement in his movies, if he could. I mean, he didn't always, but, you know, like, The Hills Have Eyes, you know, which, you know, that's a movie where it was a discussion of nuclear armament and how that, and how all that nuclear testing affected us and all that shit. So,
right.
But that's the more serious part of the movie. That's the serious theme of the movie, but it is definitely a fucking horror comedy, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Everett McGill and Wendy Robbie. Everett McGill's just a fantastic fucking villain.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is the dude who played Scorpio in Dirty Harry. This is the dude, you know, and he was in Hellraiser. He plays his character is good in that movie, but there's a twist where he's not so good. He knows how to play the heavy. And he's definitely my favorite. My favorite fucking scene, I laugh every time, is when he bayonets through the wall and he thinks he's killed Fool. And he runs out to Mommy and he's like, what is it? I got him. I was like, and then like, there's another moment where he gets dinged in the head, and before he passes out, he gives her a hilarious, oh, shit.
Yeah. And it's the every time he's like starts to chase after him, he sticks his head in one of the holes in the walls and he's like, I'm going to kill you. You know, it's just hilarious. Wendy Robbie said that this was the most fun she ever had making a movie, and it's her favorite of all the shoots she ever did for a movie or even a TV show. She's mainly a theater actress. Everett McGill has done over 1,300 performances on stage shows too. He's big time into theater.
Yeah, now to the credit of the other cast, they are all fantastic. Brandon Adams as Fool is fantastic for a child actor who had to, kind of carry the movie, and he did a great job.
Wonderful.
AJ Langer did a really good job as Alice.
Yes.
And just a little bit of a Nightmare connection. Nightmare on Elm Street, directed by Wes Craven.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Jo Minter, who plays Ruby, had a starring role in Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Yep.
So, a little bit of a connection there. She probably wants to forget Dream Child a little bit. But,
now, there is someone else I want to mention here, because he's only in it briefly. But he does the explanation, because Fool at one point gets out of the house and does make it back home, And he decides to go back for Alice because he says, as he says, he made a promise to her. And that was really cool. But in that brief moment where he is home before he goes back to the house, Bill Cobbs appears as his grandfather. And he's the one who explains, you know, everything. And he is such a great actor. And the way he explains it to Fool and he really just plays into that moment where he's explaining this whole thing. And that, you know, these people have been crazy for generations and it's their money has corrupted them and it was got worse and worse. But Bill Cobbs was great in this movie for those just moments that he was in it. It was really good.
I feel like maybe he got hit in the cutting room floor because I felt like he was in the original set more.
It did seem like, yeah, he was.
Particularly at the beginning, he was probably cut. They were just like, oh, we got to get the narrative moving.
Right.
But with what he's in, I mean, he serves his purpose as a character for the narrative. Like you said, he explains like, oh, yeah, we knew. We knew this crazy ass family.
Yeah. Well,
And he knocks it out of the park. He's a great character actor.
Something I love about this movie is of course it's called The People Under the Stairs, and the people under the stairs, these children that basically, you know, Everett McGill and Wendy Roby, they're trying to build a perfect family, and they keep getting boys to be the brother of A.J. Langer's Alice. But they all end up having a flaw. They all end up trying to get away or trying to tell people what's happened or whatever. And so what they do is instead of just killing them, they either cut off their ears, they either have heard evil, seen evil, or spoke evil. So they'll cut off their tongue, cut off their ears, or cut out their eyes. And then they put them in the basement, throw them a flashlight, and give them they feed them the dead of anyone who gets into the house or finds out too much about their lives. And so you think going into this from the name of the movie, and you've seen a couple of little glimpses of them in the trailer, you know, so you get to the theater and they're going to be the bad guys, but they're not. They're these poor people that have been trapped down there. They've been deformed by being in, you know, without light or any real food, you know, other than, you know, human being, you know. And so, Fool ends up realizing that and using them to defeat the evil couple.
And a great example of Craven's visual storytelling is Alice is making these dolls. And she's made one for Fool, or not for Fool, but she's made one for Leroy.
Yeah.
And later on, and okay, she's making dolls, whatever. But we later learn that she's made a doll for every victim that has come into the house. And at one point, they dump a box. Mommy finds them and dumps the box out on the bed. And there's all these dolls. And it's like, that's visual storytelling. This is how many people they've
killed. These people have been Alice doing this shit for a while. Yeah.
And note, here's another little subtle note. The only person that has survived mommy and daddy, so to speak, beyond the people under the stairs, is the female. Alice has survived. The men have not. They've all done.
Right. Yeah.
The boys have all done something bad that has gotten them banished. I will say this, though. Quick shout out, Sean Whalen is Roach, man. He creates such a memorable fucking
character. Does. He's fantastic in this.
And let's face it, he has a unique look, and he uses that look to full advantage.
Yep. For sure.
But his character is fantastic. I mean, that's the thing, is I sit here beyond Cobb probably having more footage in the original cut than this cut. I can't think of anything I don't like about the movie.
No, me either.
It's just a really good movie with a really good theme. It was actually a modest hit when it came out. It did make $31 million on a $6 million budget.
Yep.
That $6 million budget, that low budget, gave Craven more creative freedom. Like, the studio barely interfered with any part of it. But it came out in 91. It would go on to become a cult hit, which is great. I'm glad it got that recognition, but I feel like it is probably Craven's most underappreciated movie.
I think so too. Yeah.
I think, you know, as much as Nightmare is a fucking masterpiece and Scream reinvigorated things in 96 and he had Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left in his early career.
Yeah.
This is the one people tend to skip over when they're talking about his filmography.
Yeah.
And I really hate that because the movie deserves to be acknowledged. And in the 2000s, Craven wanted to do a remake. But when he did the remake for The Last House on the Left, which he actually did produce, and that didn't do well with audiences or critics, that project was scrapped. And somehow he had announced that somehow he was going to make it a TV show.
Yes, he was. It was going to be a TV show on the Sci-Fi Channel. He was working on that with Sci-Fi Channel when he died. And
in 2015. Yeah,
and after he died, it was dropped.
The last I've heard about any sort of remake was in 2020, and the fact of what happened in 2020 may have killed it. And that was Jordan Peele, who I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Announced he was going to remake it with his production company. He produce a remake, but nothing's been heard since.
I didn't look this up, but I would not be surprised if, like, I read interviews with Jordan Peele where he said, "Oh yeah, that movie's a major influence of mine. I see Jordan Peele all over this fucking movie." You know,
And not only that, but I'll say this too, though. This movie is still, sadly, so relevant today. I don't think the original film needs a remake. Just watch this movie.
Just watch the movie. Because
everything they talked about in the late 80s and early 90s, we're dealing with today in 2023.
Yeah. Well, and you know, whenever the people under the stairs start finally showing Fool, you know, okay, come here, I want to show you a secret. You know, of course, they're not saying that. They're, you know, giving him signals and stuff. And they take him to the one room in the house, and they open it up, and it's just money and gold coins in piles in this room. And it's such a visual representation of, look, these people could be putting this money back into the world, you know, and doing good things with it. They're just greedy. They've got so much. They just throw it into a room when they collect their rents every month, and they don't even spend it. You know, it's wild.
And talking about the comedic elements, I was just thinking of the scene after Fool has gotten out of the house. What does he do? He obviously calls the cops.
Right.
And the cops come over, and they've cleaned everything up.
Oh,
you know, they still have to polish some things off. I love when mommy has to close a door with the guns behind a wall, if you will.
Yeah.
And then you see daddy wearing a hat.
Yeah.
And as the cop looks in the room, he lifts the hat off, wipes his wound, and puts the hat back on. In that perfect comedic timing.
Yep.
That it's funny to me how horror and comedy, man, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. And this movie is a great example of a horror comedy.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. God damn. I want to watch it again almost. Talking about it. Because I do rewatch these films before we discuss them on the podcast. And so I've just watched it and I want to get off and be like, "Hey, Courtney, you want to watch it again?"
Yeah. It's a wonderful movie. I could watch Everett McGill as that character all day long. You know, it's just wonderful. Speaking of, I mean, you know, we talked about it a moment ago, but Twin Peaks, I loved him in that, you know, in, of course, Big Ed dealing with his crazy ass wife, which Wendy Roby just played perfectly.
I don't know if I was misreading this, but I think, didn't they get their parts in this movie?
Yes. Wes Craven saw them in Twin Peaks and was like, "Oh yeah, these two are perfect for this." And thank God they both said yes and went over and did it, because I couldn't see this movie without those two doing it.
Oh no, not at all.
But But yeah, that's The People Under the Stairs. It's a great horror comedy, but also with an underlying message that is still so, so relevant today. What, 32 years later?
God, yeah.
Yeah. Ain't that scary? Man. 32 years.
Just out of curiosity, when did you first watch this movie?
I watched it in the theaters.
Oh, nice.
Me and Bubba Parnell, my best friend, we went and saw this in the theaters.
Yeah, the first time I saw it was actually I went to Henderson State University. And at some point in that 3 years, 2007, 2010, I had a friend of mine, Josh. We were somehow talking about horror films and... Yeah. And he said, hey, did you ever watch The People Under the Stairs? I think Wes Craven was bought up somehow. Yeah. And I said, actually, I'll tell you the truth. I had not seen it up to that point. And he said, oh, you've got to see it. I don't know whether he had a copy that I borrowed, but somehow I got my hands on a DVD copy and I watched it and just absolutely fell in love with the movie. Like, it was just, it hit me right away. There was no delayed reaction or like, all right, whatever. But that's also how I know that the film works just as good now as it did in 91. I didn't even see it in 91. It's not me like looking back with rose colored glasses. I saw the film much later and was like, oh, this is Craven the master. It's just, there you go. And I think I was also looking for older films because that was around the time I was kind of uppity towards horror films because I was tired of remakes and reboots
right
at the time. And I was like, I don't want to watch horror movies. Yeah. They're remaking my stuff.
Well, I think, the funny part about horror movies is they, I think for like you and me who lived through 80s and early 90s horror, we kind of like, we're like, okay, we lived through Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, Ghostface shortly after. And so I think, through that early 2000s, we were kind of like, oh, fuck horror. God damn, how far are they going to push this, you know? And then... Well,
I could tell you exactly what didn't work for me in the 2000s, and it was just the remakes and the reboots.
Yeah.
I was so tired of seeing everything I watched when I was younger.
Yeah.
Being remade. Like, now today I can't really say that. Like, with it, someone comes out like Jordan Peele and says, I'm going to remake People Under the Stairs. I'm like, it's too soon. That movie's fucking 30 years old.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. Go ahead and do it.
Okay.
Plus I would love to see his take on this story. I really hope that he remakes this one day.
That's the thing for me. Anyone else but Peele announces they're remaking People Under the Stairs, I'm like, get the fuck out of my face.
Right. Yeah.
Peele announces it, he's the one guy that can announce that, and I'm like, okay.
Because I think he would go even deeper into the gentrification and the evils of capitalism type thing. The underlying tone of this movie.
Oh, he would, and proof of that is Candyman.
Yeah,
the 2021 film Candyman that he produced and Nia DaCosta directed. It was all about gentrification and police brutality, and and maybe that's one of the reasons he's not moving, or we haven't heard anything about People Under the Stairs, is because he's kind of dealt with the themes
right
that were featured in right. that movie. But yeah, if he ever comes back out and says no, I've got it, we've got an idea, I'd be like, okay, cool,
yeah,
bring it.
Yeah, please do. Are we gonna rate them, bud?
I think we're ready to rate them. For The Invisible Man, I give 5 out of 5 floating knives to the throat.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what my thing is going to be. I'm giving a 10 out of 10. I tell you what, a 10 out of 10 classic movie monster sets.
There you go. There you
classic
go.
Universal horror movie monster sets. Yeah, wish I had the money for 10 of those. Good
or,
lord.
Yeah. Or 10 out of 10 diazepam.
Oh yeah, there we go. There we go. Go ahead. What do you think? What do you want for People Under the Stairs?
You know what? I'm going to keep it simple. I give people under stairs, 5 out of 5 gold coins.
Nice, nice. I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 severed hands from my best friend that went and tried to case the joint that got fed to the dog. Man.
Jesus Christ. And yeah. I love how, like, they implied, man, you thought he was white. You should see him now.
Yeah, that shit's hilarious. Oh, man. But I'll be honest with you. I don't know what I'm going to be doing next week. Do you have an idea what you're going to be doing?
Oh, yes. I definitely know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I shared this photo with you, but I've separated all my horror film out of my collection into its own little pile and that I've just been picking from. And I'm going back to 1986, Jason. It was the time when the mall ruled. It was the time when you hung out at the Chopping Mall.
Awesome.
That's
going awesome.
To be my next movie. 1986 is Chopping Mall.
Love that movie. All right. Well, we know what JT's going to be doing. I'm contemplating mine. I'm also trying to figure out when I'm going to watch a movie because I'm a little busy right now, but we'll get it. I'll definitely get one in. I always have my moments where I'm sitting around going, I can watch a movie right now. And I'll figure one out and we'll go from there. My biggest thing is this new thing we're doing. I have so much of a time period to pick from where we're not, you know, going by decade. So I'm not confined. So it's making this broad choice, and I'll see one that I want to watch, and then I'll be like, oh, but wait, it suggested 10 more with that are, yes, I should totally do that movie.
I'm not saying that I'll stick to this, but what I've just had to do, because I found myself kind of doing that when we first started.
Yeah.
I've just been like, okay, I chose a more modern one. All right, I'm going to go to the past somewhere. And then after you go to the past, I'm going to go over here somewhere. So I've been kind of jumping from one end of the pendulum to the next end of the pendulum, and just and even that, it ain't always easy. But
right.
I've got the next 3 or 4 films picked out, really.
Awesome.
But awesome. But that could also shift. That's why we only announce one at a time.
So. Yeah. Well, on my end, just to make a few announcements here. Of course, we don't only put out Horror Bros here. We also have the Big Sad Podcast, Fetsplaining, and Turtlenecks. Listen to those. They're a lot of fun. So on the 16th, I'm going to be in Lockhart. That is sold out already, but I'm just letting everybody know that, I'm going to be in Lockhart doing a show. 22nd, that is my quarterfinal round for Funniest Person in Austin. And then on the 26th, I'm going to be in Corpus Christi, Texas. From there, I know I have a show on the 22nd of September, I believe. But all of that information can be found on Instagram. My handle is Jason_JohnsonComedy, and I'll make all show announcements and stuff there.
And shout out to Warren Greed.
All right, yeah, he won the Funniest Person in San Antonio, but goddamn did he deserve it, man. It was an unbelievable set. He was amazing. I saw him last night. We performed together.
Yeah.
And that's why JT is my ride or die, y'all. That's a good brother right there. Anyway, but yeah.
The only thing I have left to say is, for me right now, is that I'm just trying to also post as much as I can on horrorbros.blogspot.com. Right. Again, it's just a free little written review site, because that's what I used to do. It's an itch I got to scratch ever so often.
Yeah.
It's more for me than it is for anyone else, but it's a companion to this. And like I said, by the time you're listening to this, there will be, because I posted them this morning, a review for People Under the Stairs and The Invisible Man. I also have a review for Talk to Me, if you want to read any more about that movie. That's all I got, though.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. Hey, just want to remind y'all before we get out of here, stay scared and love each other. All right. Bye.
Later.